This is Jenny Garth from 90210 OMG. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competition series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh, modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honeyoak cabinets. Hello, 21st century style. Totally 90s House special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 Central on HGTV.
If you're enjoying this independent podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to do a review, like, share, and subscribe. And if you'd like to see extra content and show your support, head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. It's November the 12th, 2024, late in the afternoon, and I'm finally talking to a woman whose voice is already very familiar to me. Having watched all the background interviews with Mark, with her detailing the grooming, psychological takeover, and years of abuse that she suffered at the hands of the professional she'd employed for therapy. I was a stranger to her, and I was aware as a trauma survivor she might not feel entirely comfortable that I knew all about the worst thing that had happened to her. But thankfully, the news that I'd confronted her abuser took priority over our imbalance. She trusted Mark completely, which helped with our introduction.
I had to do the research before I could go and face him. So I have listened to, and you know, it's all private, but I have listened to all of your interviews because I needed to know, and it really affected me so much listening to what you've gone through, and I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, and I'm looking forward to now that we can have a conversation and bond and I can get to know you properly. But I had to have enough information to arm myself to go and do this. But I couldn't be too emotionally connected to you yet because I was worried I would give it away.
Now wasn't the moment for me to interview her. That comes later. But she was keen to hear what happened in Macedonia. But first, I needed to reassure her that I knew the gravity of what she'd gone through. Rape, extortion, brainwashing, and an attempt to persuade her to kill herself. The ultimate self-sealing crime. Murder, but carried out by the victim's own hand.
So, gosh, sorry, there's so much going on in my head. I'm kind of shaking a bit talking to you. And I've been looking forward to...
I can imagine. Don't worry. It's sort of fine, don't worry. I want to hug you very much.
Oh, I know. Me too. And I was looking forward to being able to tell you because we just couldn't... We didn't want you to have the burden of knowledge. And if there was a circumstance where there might have been a temptation to say to another woman you trust, don't worry, something's going to happen. You know, don't worry. You know what I mean? We needed to keep you in the dark for the reason of making sure we didn't blow my cover. And we've gone to great lengths to keep myself separate from being related to Mark or anything like this. And I met Mark a long time ago and he asked me, you know, first of all, could I maybe do a podcast on this? And then it was actually, we think you're perfect to go in and try and interview him. So I went out there and I interviewed him for, I think, 2.5 hours. And I knew my plan, and everything he says in the interview, everything is explaining exactly what he did to all of you. Say that again. I went to Skopje, yeah? Yeah, we just got back. I just flew back. We literally landed and driven here.
You probably had an honor to meet Lydia.
Oh, yes.
I explained to her that I'd interviewed Sam for my podcast on a murder case, and how it came about that I was able to gain his trust to meet him face to face, and gave her a brief summary of what I'd accused him of. She added that another alleged crime is sex trafficking, claiming at least another victim was being offered to other men for sex, a topic Sam has talked about online in the context of testing his victims.
He is enjoying his power over his patients, that he has this power to make women to sleep with the man he chooses up for them.
Do you know, he even talked about the exact scenario, which I know is in reality, of trying to encourage, you know, to have sex with other men and as a test. I mean, he goes to, I haven't listened back to the whole thing yet, and my brain is mush because it was so intense, the whole process. But I think when you hear it, I mean, it's going to be hard for you to watch, obviously, because seeing him, seeing his image, hearing his voice must be difficult for you. But I hope that you'll feel...
It's totally okay. I would love to see if you don't mind.
I understand
I'm
that.
Not afraid anymore. Because he was threatening. He actually threatened almost all of us because his sister, she's in... you can Google. She's in Israel. And she's in a very high position in the structure, governmental structure, somehow connected to the IDF. And he was threatening me, like, you know, if I speak up, if I open my mouth, or if I do harm to him, he will speak to his sister, and Mossad agents will kill me. And he was threatening other women like this, and, you know. But I'm not afraid of him, because when people know who he is, he's just a scum. Mm. And to be afraid of him, no, I'm not afraid, so if you don't mind sharing, I will gladly listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard's we've just watched the sort of the tail end or the confrontation, and he literally, throughout the interview, he almost admits or explains every single thing that he's done. He even talks about rape and sexual assault.
Yeah, but he loves it. He used to tell me all the time, remember, you know, it's great fun to hide in the plain sight.
I said that to him, literally just before I say it, I said, hiding in plain sight, and he agreed.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight. And then he's not only hiding in plain sight, but as I explained to Mark, he's also using his YouTube channels to continue torture his victims. Mm-hmm. Because he knows that the woman behind the screen, I mean, there are several women at any given moment simultaneously, and he knows that those victims, they are, you know, they are just dying behind the screen, and he knows to use trigger words.
It's like code names, so that she will know that it's directly. There's an audience of one.
And the victim knows, yes. Baby seal, mini mug, Bambi woman. You know, as I say, we are, you know, the whole zoo of magic creatures.
And the thing is that I know that there's yourself and other women that you know, the filmmakers are aware of. But imagine the ones that are now currently being groomed, currently being baited.
Yeah.
And I hope that if we can save anyone or stop it, that's the hope.
It's great what you did. It's so brave. It's so fantastic. And because maybe this will stop him, because he's totally obsessed. He's compulsive about hunting, about picking up other victims and totally destroying them. I also sent to Mark the part of his interview that he once gave to Richard, and he was explaining, because none of us could imagine, because Richard could never imagine that the fucker is talking about himself, because he was playing, you know, such a great friend, such a father figure even. And when I was watching that interview, I knew already, because I was already, this was the time he was killing me, basically, when he was in Prague. And he says openly that I need much higher grade of heroin, I need much higher, the drug that is much more potent. If she kills herself or attempts suicide, then the separation is ultimate. So he just, yeah, goes there and...
She's referring to the video which you've heard the audio of, and like Richard and the viewers, no one realises he's being literal. It's not his shtick or bravado or hypothetical.
But when you see this video of this interview, he literally says, I should be in jail, you know, but he's talking about narcissists, but he keeps saying, I have done bad things, I should be in jail.
Yes.
And it's just, it's remarkable.
Jail, yeah.
It really is remarkable.
I should be in jail, exactly. And then if you also saw this part in I Psychopath, where he says he's bragging that I was obsessed to engineer a kind of malignant reverse therapy, malicious therapy, like mind engineering. And this is exactly what his cult therapy is about.
You'll hear more about cult therapy, but it's essentially re-traumatising a patient, claiming that's how they can overcome a trauma. In the context of something like a fear of spiders or heights, you might think that's reasonable to expose someone to a trauma. But raping a victim of rape is another story.
If he ends up in court and then my interview with him is played, That would be
he
it.
Is
He's
best,
just
the best prosecutor for himself. Yeah.
He is absolutely his best prosecutor to put himself in jail. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Because he can't keep it to himself. He wants to brag about so much. Mm. In one of the correspondence with another victim from Romania, he's writing, "Think of me, Hannibal Lecter. I'm exactly like him." And it's like he's bragging, you know. But the funny thing, the ironic thing, now you know what I mean, because you met this worm, yes? He's a midget. He's so clumsy. He's so ridiculous. You can't put together the pieces that this ridiculous, clumsy midget is a dangerous maniac, you know. It's like, well, you would imagine someone like maybe Ted Bundy or, you know. But...
Yeah.
What I mean by this is that the way he looks, the way he behaves, is very much deceiving. This is also one of his masks.
Yeah, because he doesn't... If he was a handsome, taller guy, there's almost a little bit of, you know, the attraction is part of the danger. But he... And I understand it's so slow. His wife is part of it. And interestingly, we think he was starting to try to groom me.
Absolutely, you were his next target, yeah. Mm. He just makes, you know, this map, like, what victim will be easy to get by what means. Mm. And he first made me kind of friend with his wife. Then he adopted me. He literally sent me email adoption papers. You read that, yes?
Yeah.
And then Lydia was crying on my shoulder, please take care of my baby boy, please, and so on, you know. And I was like, fuck, I'm like in a dream state. I don't know what to do. And then also his appearance, the way he looks, he's so pathetic. You feel pity for him. You want to take care of this small baby behind him, you know. Like poor Sam, he was abused by his mother. He was so, he's just heartless, cold-hearted. I mean, horrible criminal, absolutely merciless. When he's in his assassination mode, he's absolutely, he's merciless, totally.
And I know we've still got a long way to go with this, but is it your greatest hope that he ends up in jail?
Well, what I really would like to happen is that not a single woman anymore would end up being his victim, because my decision to participate in the documentary was dictated by the story, not even by my own story, but by story. Because when she shared her story with me, she was 20 back then, and I was thinking to myself, well, she's 20, my daughter was 17. It's like 3 years only, like, you know, older than my daughter. And what if my daughter was on her place? And me, like mother, I was terrified. And then I was again replaying all the shit he did to me. And I was like, well, enough is enough. So my biggest dream is that he doesn't have any access to any woman anymore in his life. But knowing how compulsive the fucker is, knowing how deceptive he is, the best way to keep him away from people would, of course, be if he goes to jail. Which, honestly, I doubt, because, for example, who has, like, perfect case for the court. She will never speak up. She's afraid of her father. She's afraid of her family and so on. Other women, like, for example, she's extremely embarrassed by what happened. Also doesn't want to speak up. So women are embarrassed, afraid. I think... Because I was reading the correspondence between him and where he's literally threatening to kill her. And I think deep inside she's afraid of him. Which is, of course, I mean, cognitively she knows he is impotent, but she's afraid. So I don't know if he ends up in jail unless there is someone with a strong case to testify against him in the court.
I understand that, and I think this is it's an age-old story, and we've seen it happen with all these, you know, recent big figures, Harvey Weinstein, and just only now that he's dead, Mohammed Al-Fayed, all these women coming forward, and it's the, you know, some of them might have gone to the police and not been listened to. What I would hope is that, and I don't know the rules for the specific countries, but certainly here, if a woman is a victim of, sexual assault or rape, they have anonymity, the courts don't name them. I have contacts and people that I can get in contact with that we're going to figure out what's the best way we do this. And this is how these men get away with it. It's crimes being committed in different countries that they don't live in, for example. So the victim's somewhere and there's a law that's different here. And it's awful, but trying to get it all collectively. If it all happened in one country where the victims, and the perpetrator in the same place, it's a lot easier. But I want to say something to you. You know, your very first point to me was, do I believe you? And, without a shadow of a doubt. And I also want you to understand, I can tell you're an incredibly intelligent woman, and not for one second do I judge or blame you, and it's not your fault what you've gone through. He targets intelligent women. That's part of the thrill. And you can see his MO, that it was over a long period of time. And he explains in the interview as well, like literally taking over your mind. You did not have a choice as to what happened. He was controlling you. And I fully understand the sequence of events. And don't think, it's so easy to say, oh, well, you just didn't need to have another session with them again. But I do fully understand that you were properly brainwashed. And as you said, you were addicted to the therapy. He created the new you, the splitting, as you say, that you couldn't make a decision about anything going on in your life without speaking to him about it, without his counsel. He was supposed to be your safe person.
Not shooting the gun in the shop. I would need his advice. He became the pivot of my existence, totally.
Yeah, and the fact that he didn't, when you finally met him, he didn't physically touch you. It was almost like he was too scared. That's all part of it, because he made you feel so safe, this kind of like father-grandfather figure, his wife's always exactly. present, that you were so deep in the trap before that clamped around you. You didn't have time to think, and really your autonomy had gone.
For you to understand how much he didn't touch me in Skopje, for example, when we were taking picture together, three of us, he asked the other person to take the picture. Sometimes when you take the picture with someone you established some connection, you can hug him sometimes. I was so afraid to even touch him with my shoulder, like, God forbid, because he was like, no, absolutely. I'm totally boundaried. You have your own space, I have my own space. So I could never even imagine what he had in mind for me back then,
I know. You paid him to be a professional. And he completely took advantage of you. And he gathered up every vulnerability, everything you told him, as ammunition. He gathered it, and then...
Did you read the email he sent me threatening that everything I told him in therapy will become public mm-hmm. if I don't stop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know all his threats. You're the only one I've heard, your voice and your story. We decided it was... I said to the guys, I don't want to be... If I'm completely overwhelmed and I need to try and still have a clear mind when I go out there and meet him. And also, I kind of didn't want to know too much because it would be almost impossible to hide my disgust. And I almost had to compartmentalize, like, just imagine that he is this, and he is very knowledgeable, great to interview. And if he wasn't a criminal, would be a great subject for a documentary series. That is all true. Interestingly, about the touch thing, he had just posted a video, an interview about hugging and self-hugging and how important touch is, literally a couple of days before I met him. And I am genuinely a hugger. It's a natural thing that I do. I'm a hug people when I meet them. And we were in the street and I'm like, I went like this. And I went, I'm a hugger. And I did hug him because I was like, I wonder how he's going to feel about this, But... I think he hugged me back. I'll need to watch the video, but all of it was just so surreal. But like you, I was kind of shocked. I didn't realize how, and I know it's partly the way he's been filmed for the documentary, he seems bigger, but he's short, But I mean, there's a million, and we are going to talk, me and you alone, many, many times, I'm sure, going forward. But
I'm looking forward.
Yeah. I'm so glad to, and it's surreal for me because you're. I love your voice, by the way, and you're beautiful, and I love who you are, and the way you explain things. You're amazing, but it's surreal for me to finally be interacting with you and finally being able to tell you, you know, this. And I hope and pray that I have done you proud. I did the best I could. I tried to be as brave as I could, and I hope that...
Thank you so much for your bravery, for your courage. You are absolutely amazing. It's amazing what you did. Thank you very much, really.
No, what you've done is amazing, because I know how hard it is to tell your story. So you're the brave one, my dear. You really are. And I wish I could hug you so tight right now. I'd cry. Yeah, it's so nice. Do you want to, Richard, do you want to say anything? Mark?
I'd love Richard to share with you some of what he saw, because we just watched some of the footage. And look, I think that the material that she just got in Macedonia, it's even more of a confession than the YouTube stuff you sent.
Great, yeah.
It's really.
But Ayla, is this recorded on camera when he says to Lydia, Lydia, it's not like that?
All on camera, everything. Everything.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're so brave. Amazing.
I can't wait. I wish you were here, because what I'd love to do is be to sit with you, watching it with you, to see your reaction. I mean, we'll have to figure out a way for...
I think what we should do tomorrow is we should do a screen share.
Yeah, do a screen share. That's a great idea. Yeah. That's a good idea, and we'll get your reaction. We'll show it to you tomorrow.
Great.
Yeah, we'll do that. But I'd love Richard to share what he thinks is going on with Sam right now. Because it's...
Yeah, please, Richard.
Yeah, it was unexpected.
It's not... what happens is not high drama. He doesn't tantrum because the cameras are rolling. He wants to escape, but he can't because he's a meandering buffoon. So he can't even take the fucking microphone off. So he sits there, furious. Furious. You would recognize his facial expression, but he doesn't. He tries to cover it. And then he starts to go into shock. And all he can do is say, you didn't say that you'd ask me these questions, and it's unethical for you to ask me these questions. And Isla's saying to him, but you're a professional. You set yourself up as a therapist. You abuse these women's trust. Don't you have anything to say about that? That's not the point. The point is, it's unethical for you to... You know the whole routine. He just stubbornly just kept saying that whilst he's... trying to find his bag, trying to find his get his microphone off. And Lydia is, as Isla said, interjecting and trying to say, no, this didn't happen, but he stops her. So she says, he did not have sex with any of his patients. I was always there. And he says, no, Lydia, that's not correct. That's not correct. The important thing is that you know that what Isla's done is going to finish him off. He's fucked.
Guys, I love all of you. I have to fly to Scotland tomorrow and hug all of you. Thank you. You're my heroes.
At this point, I had my arms around Richard and Mark.
We're going to get him. We're going to get him.
I hope so.
We're going to get him. But you know, the thing is that in the way that Isla explained it and what Richard said, Sam is afraid now. He's very scared. And
that's good.
We don't think he's going to post something for a while.
He's probably imagining it's a court case, like an Interpol case. I don't think he's twigged it's from the documentary. So he will be frozen. He will freeze for a little bit whilst he tries to figure out what's going on. And then
does he know that there are many women who shared
you said that,
stories?
Right?
I said that I didn't name anyone, and I didn't say anything that would identify anyone. I said I've seen hundreds and hundreds of pages of communication, I think, and photographs, documentation and photographs of interactions between him and his patients.
I'm asking because, for example, I was in contact, like, all together with 10, 12, like, some of them in contact, some of them, they exist, they didn't want to talk. But why I'm asking is that if he doesn't know the precise number, because only he knows the real number, and I think the real number is much, much, much higher. So now his fear will...
Oh, no, he'll imagine, you know him, he's a baby, he's going to catastrophize, he'll think everybody has come forward, the police are going to be knocking on his door tomorrow. You know his health, you know how he is. This is the end.
Yeah.
This is the end.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, we're sorry that we had to keep everything so secretive.
Absolutely, Mark. I totally understand. Really, trust me.
Yeah, and I know you were asking me the other day about what's happening and what's happening, but we've been working on this since February.
We met last year. And there was...
Mark, I was so much afraid that he kind of maybe threatened you and you got scared.
No one scares this guy. He took down Nexium.
Doesn't scare me one bit. So good.
Thank you.
Good.
A step in the right direction.
And I'm so sorry if you were shocked by...
I'm not shocked. I wasn't shocked. I'm just very happy.
Good.
Because I was thinking for a while, honestly, that probably Vaknin threatened guys, Scott, Mark, and they decided to cut the project, to cut it down. And I was like, well, so I'm so, so happy that it was going on and that it's so amazing what you just told me. It's amazing.
Good.
Great.
They were gearing up for, I like to call myself the Trojan horse. Going in there, stealth.
The Trojan horse, yeah.
We said goodbye and arranged our call for the next day. But before the camera switched off for the night, Mark asked for one more thing.
Keep on rolling. I just want to get your guys' reactions while this is uploading, the two of you.
Sorry, this is a slightly selfish thing to say, first of all. My victims, they're usually dead, sadly, because it's murders that I do. And this is so unique. With my murder victims, I know everything about them, and I know their story, and I tell their story, and I'm their voice. And in this situation, I had to know her story, know her voice, be her voice without meeting her. And I know it was just on video, but that was so surreal for me to, and she's still alive, you know, and I know that, you know, he's tried to kill her soul, and she is a fighter and a brave woman, so. That was quite a thing for me to have, you know, the person that all my attention's on. And actually, everyone that I see justice through for, they can't see it unless they're looking down from heaven. So this is a big deal, and I really, really want us to get proper justice, you know. And you got upset as well. I don't blame you, because the thing is, what I realise is, and I know we've still got to have conversations, but you know, you are one of his victims. He deceived you to take on a role where you've ended up, sorry, I may be putting words in your mouth, but, you know, for you to feel bad because you felt like you were a validation tool and part of the, you know, the trap. Because you've gone through what you've gone through in your life, you've been a victim. You know, you came from the perspective of being a victim of narcissism, where he is a narcissist, and the two of you together is a winning combination for you to go and educate people, and you were trying to help them, you know, en masse, not just one-on-one, but these groups. And then to learn that he was using you and your integrity as a safety kind of, you know, check, that must be hard.
It's hard. It's not that bad. I'm more concerned for the damage he's done to people like... It's been torture for her for a long, long time. Mm. She suffered for many years, and it's not just affected her, it's affected her kids as well. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to know that justice is going to be served. Mm-hmm. However it's going to be served, some kind of justice will be served. Mm-hmm. And it's what she deserves, it's what his victims deserve. So I'm happy for that. Mm-hmm.
But what I'm meaning is that, and again, it's like not you unwittingly, and you must carry some, and sorry, this is going to maybe come out wrong. He's altered your history of what you thought you were doing, and you thought you were doing good, and now you're like, there's now this ick and poison and cancer that's attached to all the work you've done, and you know, kind of underneath, you know, hiding in plain sight underneath your nose, he was doing this. So he's tried to destroy it in a very different way, but he's tried to do that to you. And then, of course, once you have the discard, the detach, he's now trying to destroy you and your reputation.
He would like to.
And I think it's really brave of you, though, to take part. And I know it's not without cost, you know, to do this. So I think it's really important. And thank you for, you know, what she said there, that broke my heart. That the first thing she said was, do I believe her? And this is what victims do, you know. Women aren't believed. And I went through the same thing. My situation's different. I had a stalker, but going to the police, without the male police officer even talking to me, he'd been given a report from someone else and was told there was to be no doubt in it that he needed to go and warn this man. And he said, I got an email saying, oh, I had a cup of tea with him. He seemed really nice. I think this is a misunderstanding. He did not believe me. He had no interest in even listening to me. Now, I know this is very, very different, but, you know, the vulnerability of her there to say that, it makes me so sad.
It's very, very hard for her because she's been living in a reality for years where Sam is all powerful. So she thinks that anybody who comes into contact with him is going to be persuaded by him or threatened by him or intimidated by him ultimately. So.
And she's you know, she's separated physically from being, you know, infiltrated by him, but there is, as Sam says himself, it's there's a long recovery process. She has to completely detach from everything that he did to her. The poison in her brain, she has to unravel from all that, and she's doing well, but she's not completely out of it yet. And it, you know, might take a long time because it took 7 years to get there. There's a slow burn. That's the thrill of what they do. It's not an in and out. It's a complete and utter hostile takeover. In fact, I think he uses that expression, a hostile takeover. And I think as well what she said, to just stop him. That's all I want. I want him to
stop. She'll be very, very grateful. You know, there's a lot of vindication in that. She knows that while she didn't know what was happening, people are working on behalf of her and people like her to make it right. And she'll be very, very happy about that.
In a very simplistic term, I went there as a person with hopefully some authority and said, you're a bad man and you're doing bad things. That's it.
And then brought it home, you know, brought it back for other people to see. It's going to mean a lot. It's going to mean a lot to her.
That was a lot for the woman to take in. An unexpected person with unexpected news. And we knew it would be too much to confront her with the footage in one go. Plus, as you could hear, I was so tired and having difficulty thinking clearly. I needed my bed. However, I woke up at 4 a.m. and listened to the whole interview and edited together the main parts for me to play to her the next day. Before I end this episode, I want you to hear Dr. Romney's take on victims not being believed, and how that is actually part of the narcissist's goal.
The people who experience narcissistic abuse, foremost in what they go through is the confusion, the self-doubt, and the self-blame. A lot of, this is my fault. It's gotta be my fault. This can't all be, in fact, they almost wanna take responsibility, and the narcissistic person's happy to have you take the responsibility, right? It must've been something I did. It must've been something I said. And the more malignant and dangerous and frightening the relationship it is, certainly the more it looks like post-traumatic stress. However, narcissistic abuse, people experiencing it, there are some unique top notes to it that come from experiencing a form of relational abuse. I don't care if it's in an intimate relationship, workplace, friendship, family, doesn't matter to me what the origin of it is very unique, and most of the world minimizes what folks who are going through narcissistic abuse go through, including therapists do this. And people will say, oh, come on, all relationships are tough. It can't be that bad. Or maybe you're also responsible to all of these kinds of things. These people have been through, they've already doubted themselves for years. So when they actually go a little public with it and they get doubted again, many folks with narcissistic abuse go right back into the shadows and may not emerge again for years to get help.
I was extremely aware of the fragility of the victim and the potential impact, good and bad, of learning about the confrontation with Sam. This is a woman, one of many, who's felt unheard, misunderstood, and filled with self-doubt, blame, and judgment for years. And as significant as it was for her to know a team of people believed her, were on her side in seeking justice, there's a world out there with many people who will choose judgment over curiosity. In the next episode of The Narcissist Playbook, the woman who survived Sam Vaknin watches her abuser squirm.
You've had sexual relationships or we have had an agreement
not to discuss my private life.
It's not
your private life, motherfucker. It's not your private life.
The floodgates open on both sides of the video screen as years of emotion erupt in a moment of vindication.
I really, honestly, Isla, I don't know how I survived. And I'm thinking I survived to see women like you who can believe, who can trust, who can help to fight this evil.
And Mark and I reflect on the bigger meaning.
I think what's profound about this, for maybe both you and I, is this represents more than just this.
The Storyteller Narcissist Playbook is written, produced, and edited by me, Isla Traquair, and it's the fourth in the Storyteller series. This is an independent production, and I rely on you, the listeners, to help spread the word by showing your support. It doesn't cost anything, just a few clicks to like, share, subscribe, and review. And soon there'll be extra content available on my Patreon for the price of a cup of coffee, including analysis, evidence, regular videos, and more. Thank you for listening. If you've been affected by narcissistic abuse, there are links for support in the show notes.